Sam. There it is. Guys, welcome back to another episode of Corridor Digital Podcast, where we talk about making videos, life, and Ren's hair. Today on the podcast, we've got Sam Gorski on guitar. We've got Ren Weichman on Sour Patch Kids. We've got Nick LaRon on Gummy Bears. And wait, Ren, you also have a dog. What's your dog's name, Ren?
Peace.
Yeah.
Welcome.
That was right. Beautiful.
I feel like that was a very... That was a very marijuana-induced intro, I feel like.
I just realized that I'm using like the same thing I use for my microphone. I have my guitar plugged into like all the time, so I could have been doing this for every Zoom call.
Oh, so man. Stupid. Oh, now wait. You can just do this for Zoom calls in general.
Yeah, this is plugged directly into my PC, so.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So let's start that. Let's turn that into a thing. Like, actually, yeah. Maybe we can sell that as a service. Maybe you can like, you can sell Sam as like, he's just a bard that will like attend your Zoom.
E-bard.
Yeah, e-bard.
Sam just kind of zooms in. Hey guys, don't mind me.
Sam's e-bard services. He just shows up.
He does hoedowns too.
Oh, he does. Sam, do a
does rockabilly drive-through parties.
Do a rockabilly hoedown.
Yeah.
Beautiful. All about that low note though.
That one.
Wow. Well, so there you have it. We've already come up with a great idea. ebards.com.
ebards.com. Speakingorski.com/ebardservices.
Hey, Christian, is today's episode sponsored? I don't think it is.
It is not today, but it will be next week.
I think it's sponsored by Corridor Digital.
Yeah, the awesome subscription streaming platform.
Guys, CorridorDigital.com is one of the best subscription streaming platforms on the market. More on that later.
Wait, but I thought you were only on YouTube, Corridor Digital.
Turns out, no, we're not only on YouTube. In fact, if you're listening to this podcast audio only, you might be listening to it on such platforms as Spotify or Google Podcasts or iTunes.
Or Audible.
Or Audible. Does Audible have podcasts?
No, but I was thinking the Top 10 Games book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. It is, true. Though. But anyways, so we're gathered here today. I thought we'd take a little bit of time to discuss, you know, we get a lot of questions all the time. Hey guys, how do you come up with ideas? What goes into your ideas? What makes a good video? I just figured, you know, we've got an ace crew here. And so maybe we could just talk about some recent examples. Maybe they don't have to be videos we've made. They can be videos you've seen and just talk about, you know, what goes into them and what makes a good video. If you have to classify it, what makes a good video from a bad video, you know? And
great.
I think one of the first things is your connection to the characters. That's the first thing. And it's one of the most diverse things about a video, but that's the first starting point right there is, you know, you can have a video about anything. It can be about changing a light bulb. It can be about getting a drone out of a tree. It can be about a Boss Town Dynamics robot. But if you're not feeling that, you know, then you're just not going to watch it. Even if it's like, the weird thing is even when it's like a viral video, you know, and it's like cell phone footage and you see that and it's like, you know, some chaotic like moment in time. What you're looking at are the people.
My favorite videos from the protests has been the buddy comedies that go on. You know, you see these crazy characters.
Yeah,
Seth Rogen, James Franco. No,
what did you call him?
Never mind, bad joke. I see what you're saying. I think any video that you find good, it's totally, you know, objective, but any video you find good has a personal connection. And that is where character comes in.
You're right. It is subjective. You know, oftentimes what makes a good video is highly subjective, but you know, like there's still some through lines. Like you might not know a good video when you see it, but you certainly know a bad video when you see it. And the first thing about that you notice with a bad video is like, oh, I'm just totally checked out. 30 seconds in, you're not even. It feels like 2 minutes. It feels like an hour because you haven't actually taken the time as the creator to present the first and foremost human personality.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a recent example we dealt with, Jake and Sam, and maybe Ren also in our editor applications. You know, there are hundreds, thousands of those.
Because
you were talking about that, and I was thinking, like, when do I watch bad videos? Like, because usually bad videos you don't watch, right? You
just right.
Like you realize usually subconsciously, this is a bad video. I don't want to be here. I gotta go watch a good video. And luckily, YouTube also does a good job with the algorithm. But
yeah,
that exercise of watching through, I'm sure you can speak to this. Watching through all these editor applications, there's some, I mean, I'm not going to diss on anyone. There's no particular one.
But we're going to diss on some people.
But I mean, there's obviously a level, there's a whole spectrum of quality and some of them were bad. And how do you quantify that?
It's easy. I think the bad ones come down to like three concepts, which is if you are going to communicate something to someone, you need to get to the point of what you're trying to communicate very quickly, or at least give people a hint of, hey, I'm about to give you two more points, you know? Right. That's why I said, hey, I've got 3 points. And so that's the first one though. It's like the idea of like getting grounded and like storytelling, communicating anything is important. You don't want to hear someone ramble and then ask them, wait, what are you talking about? You know,
I feel like
that it happens in everyday conversations too.
Yeah.
I feel like one of the more important things about a video is its pacing. It has to have good pacing. Whether that's fast pacing or slow pacing depends on the content itself. Because you can have a bad video that's just cut too quickly, right? Or you can have a bad video. Usually a bad video is just because the pacing is way too slow. So it's like, you know, people ask, what is a good length for a video? Well, the answer is 10 minutes. So you can get that extra monetized.
Now it's only 8, courtesy of new YouTube.
Right, yeah. But in truth, a video needs to be as long as it needs to be, which sounds like a cop-out answer, but it's the truth because a video could be 3 minutes long because the content can only support itself for 3 minutes. Or in the case of our recent video with getting the drone out of the tree, that was a 22-minute video. You rarely make videos that are longer than 20 minutes, but that video kind of like it was not fast-paced, but there was no fluff. That's the important thing. It's like anything that's in there has a purpose, whether it's for education or entertainment, it has to have a purpose.
That's, I think I was going to combine the second point a little bit with that idea of pacing, but what you said is everything has to have purpose. And I think those are both ways to sum up the same thing. I feel like pacing is something that it's very objectively easy to see. But the thing is when slow-paced things work, it's because they're still giving you purposeful, relevant information at the right time that you need to know it. And so, it's a very subjective area, but ultimately, you can sum it up with saying, only include information with purpose to your point. And if you are going to include something that isn't purposeful to the point, it's good to maybe kind of like highlight that in a way, you know, like make it.
Like a satire or a cutaway or something.
Well, I feel like it's fluff, right? You don't want to have fluff in your video just for the sake of being there. But fluff is okay if it's entertaining.
Tactical fluff. You need some of that. The drone video has that a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
It's like those character moments and like, you know, some story elements that aren't necessary, but serve the audience, serve the character.
Mm-hmm.
I think both the things that you mentioned, Ren, pacing, and Sam, getting to the point right off the bat are both things that we're lacking in the less good submissions that Jake and you know, we all went through for those submissions. A lot of people like would just not really cut to the core of what Sam wanted from like when the scene was Laika came by to scan the studio, and you know, it's a whole scene with a guy coming, he's a technician for Laika, coming by setting up this awesome LiDAR scanner, and Sam wants to use it for his Unreal stuff. But that's the story. This guy talked for about 20 minutes about the tech, and it's all really interesting stuff. But a lot of people hung up on that stuff and not Sam's like cutting through to what Sam wanted out of him and what Sam wanted out of that tech.
The purpose of why he was there in the first place.
And the best ones took that guy's mission statement out of his dialogue. You know, they found it in what, Sam's mission statement and any supporting quotes that the guy was, you know, information that the tech was giving him, and put that as the intro to the video. So you got a payoff already. Like right as it started, you know, they set up the Sam's story. And after you set up the story in a video, then you can justify some fluff, I think.
Interesting, because it's kind of relative to itself in a way. Like when you talk about pacing and you talk about like cutting to what's important to like move the story along, it's
sure.
It's kind of like, you know, when you start and you have an idea, whether that's like in paper or in video, it's kind of like you're standing at the top of a ridgeline and you have like a ball, and you can only put the ball down once, but you can put it down wherever you want, you know. But then once it's down, like you start to eliminate the possibilities that can come from it, right? As it gets further down the hill, there's less and less things that it's capable of doing until you get to your final destination.
Then it's too late.
And then it's too late.
You can't go back up the hill.
Yeah, no, but then your story's run, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw one more thing out there.
What was your third? What was your final?
It's expectations. And it comes from expectations from, obviously you can apply it to character stuff, but ultimately it's all about the audience. It's all about what are the audience's expectations going into something, and why or how are you going to betray those expectations? And that's super important, because it works in two ways, and it works for any type of story. It works for stories where you know exactly what's going to happen, but you have no idea how you're going to get there. I think Ren's drone video is kind of like a good example of that kind of thing, where it's like, look, it's a drone in a tree. Like, we know he's going to get it down, but it's all the things and the steps that you go to get there that make it interesting. And those are the unexpected elements. And then it kind of inversely works too, in the sense of like something, you know, going towards a task that seems clear cut and the goal seems very straightforward from the start, but that goals, the expectations and that goal shifts into new results. And like the story itself can, you know, spiral there. I mean, and usually those
conflict,
those goal shifting stories where the expectations of the goal changing, usually that ends up kind of still being a cyclical story, like the first one, which is, oh, we got to the place it's the story where you didn't know that you knew the goal the whole time, you know. It's, and so that's like the big difference there.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the best way to sum it up, because there's no reason to tell someone something they already know. You know, it's like Ren got the drone down from a tree. It's like, all right, I got it down from the tree. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and like, what's another great example? Like what the guy who free soloed the in Yosemite or whatever, right? Yeah. Like, you know, Alex Honnold. It's same thing there, which is like that movie would have been way lamer if it was like just a sweet. I mean, it would be pretty cool, but if it was just him starting at the bottom, going like, here we go. And then he gets to the top, it's like the end, and you're like, all right, you did it. You know, it's like, it's still cool, but like, there's nothing unexpected so much that's happening in that version.
Well, yeah, and then plus with that, it's like the context is everything. You know, the whole movie is basically setting up why this is such a crazy monumental task. And then he goes and does it. And so it's like it's its own built-in reward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing to consider is that like we're kind of talking about a very specific kind of video here. We're talking about like narrative videos, even if they are kind of reality-based, like the drone recovery video, you know, stories.
I feel like I'm trying to keep this stuff general enough where it applies to even a 30-second thing.
Well, I'm talking like, what about like, so videos that Jenna likes to watch are like these half-hour chiropractic videos where it's literally just a person popping a person's back and the body.
That's a thing?
Wait. ASMR videos, popper. You know?
She doesn't watch it for education?
The chiropractor is kind of entertaining. but like, wow. It's basically this professional chiropractor who she gets these clients in and she does all this stuff to this person. It's kind of crazy to watch. It's kind of satisfying to hear the pops, but there's no story. There's no like evolution or whatever. It's just a video that exists. And it's like,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
I'm thinking about like a Boston Dynamics video where she comes out with like kettlebells and she's like,
this one's called this video is called Scary Loud First Time Chiropractic Adjustment. Chiropractic changes life.
Okay, so videos that many believe to be good videos, but they don't follow the sort of story format that we at Corridor have like cultivated for our own videos, you know.
But do you still have setup, payoff, or pacing and expectations?
It has everything to do with expectation. You're right. It's like, you know what you're getting into when you click on an ASMR video. You're going to have this cute little girl is going to be like, hey.
Yeah, well, I feel like you could liken that analogy, though, still to like, all right, you want a good meal? Let's go to In-N-Out. And then someone else is like, how about we go to like a 5 or 4-star restaurant and get like a steak dinner? It's like both meals objectively taste good and are satisfying, but it's just about this like level of detail and craft you want to talk about. You know, I feel like you can make stuff. I don't know.
It's true. You can make
stuff on all levels. But
well, for instance, one of my favorite videos to come out this year is titled "Building a 3.5 kilowatt hour DIY solar generator for $650 start to finish," and it is from this channel called Lithium Solar, and he is kind of my new favorite YouTuber. He's rarely on screen. He doesn't really have like the sort of like YouTuber presence, but he's very good at like communicating like some technical details really efficiently. And this video is a 33-minute video, and it's got over 2 million views, and it's literally just him going through extremely technical detail of how to build a battery pack. And next thing I knew, I'd finished the whole video. I was like, what happened? Where did my half hour go? I didn't even realize I just spent all this time watching this fascinating video. I've since gone on to watch almost every video on his channel. So that's an example of like no story.
Wait, what's this now guy called?
His name is Lithium Solar. Okay. But that's his YouTube channel.
There can't be 2 million people that genuinely want to follow along in this process. So what do you think he did right?
Yeah,
in the video question. To get people to watch that 30 minutes.
Now, are you just interested?
Is
this one of the best battery videos you've seen?
This is one of the best battery videos I've seen.
So what sets it apart from other battery videos?
Yeah, what is the magic here? Let's break this down. I was actually
thinking about this after I rewatched the video.
Because we're in a whole new category. We're not talking about like, hey, it's Friday night, 9 p.m., you want to relax, you grab a beer, and you watch like a 90-minute battery build.
Well, that's exactly what I did. It was a Friday evening. I had my beer.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Okay, never. I take it all back.
But I think it's because there's no fluff. It's a half-hour video, but every piece of information he's communicating is useful and also kind of fascinating because it's kind of bizarre. Like he goes through like welding battery packs to nickel strips, and then kind of like doing stuff. But like as soon as he starts doing something repetitive, it cuts to the next piece in the puzzle. It's like, the procedure is very lengthy. I don't know how long it took him to do this, but like it never gets repetitive, but it always constantly feels like it gives you that your own sort of DIY feel. Yeah, where
this guy is a battery god.
Everything
what's his channel
very
again?
Clear.
It's called Lithium Solar.
He's not verified or anything. He's got 60,000 subscribers.
Yeah, I've been wanting to collab with him or something, but I have no idea where he is, if he'd be interested in anything like this, but he knows his stuff when it comes to batteries.
This is incredible. Well, I'm scrubbing through this video, and everything's extremely well lit. It never stays on the same shot for too long.
Yeah.
It seems like there's constantly new, pretty interesting stuff going on.
It's fairly interesting. It's also fairly esoteric, you know? It's like no one knows really how to do this. I have put a lot of time into figuring out how to do this, and even I'm still like, I'm learning a lot of stuff here.
Dude, yeah. This is the same thing as primitive. This is just primitive technology.
Yeah,
but it is primitive. Modern.
Unprimitive technology. Exactly.
Okay, so like, why is primitive technology?
Let's talk about PrimTech.
Let me throw you my pitch here, because this is like, I can't tell if we're in a new category or not. Of like what constitutes something a good video, because this is, it's very abstract at this point, but let me just say, like, primitive technology and this guy, there's a big thing that's happening here, which is they're building something step by step, and mm-hmm. they are not messing up. Like, think about this. Like, think about something you know how to construct or build. Now imagine you're going to film yourself doing it, and every step of the way that you film is basically going to be the correct move. You know, imagine not messing up. Yeah. And having to correct for something, like for me, whenever I'm building stuff, there's errors, you know, and I have to deal with it on the fly. It's not like now I'm going to do this, click, done, success. Now I'm going to do this. You know, it's like there's this perception of like taking a complex task and then making it basically like approachable, and like it empowers you with the feeling that you yourself can accomplish this, no matter who you are, because you are watching someone do it, and it seems apparently incredibly easy.
I think there's something to that. Like watching someone, like Jake, when you first told me the idea for this.
Oh, I'm gonna say it's empowering.
Yes, yes.
But for real though, it's like it's watching a tutorial.
Yeah, because you're like, tutorial. A, it's educational. It's inspirational because you're like, I understand how to do this now. Even if you maybe don't have the skill to do it, you know how it's kind of done. But also there's something to, I think, in any situation, watching someone who is good at something doing their craft or their passion is going to be entertaining no matter what it is. Like, it's just, there's a fascination with that. That's why PrimTech, I think, is so cool. That's why this battery guy is, I think, compelling.
Element, the idea of empowerment, because like, I'm thinking about like, okay, what does this battery video and The Matrix have in common? You know, I'm serious.
The Matrix.
And like when you're watching The Matrix, you're like jazzed up and you're like, fuck yes. Like, dude, this guy's fucking got a minigun now and he's blasting everyone. And he's a master of his computers. Yeah, the dopamine receptors are going off. And I'm trying to figure out like how because I know that feeling, and I feel like a mild version of it when I watch content like this, where it's like my imagination is like, it feels possible to accomplish these tasks that were once impossible. So there's something there. I don't know. And I feel like, well, maybe like a good story kind of gives you the same effect as this, in the sense of like you get answers or you get like visceral satisfaction from The Matrix and a guy putting a battery together.
There's also something insanely neutral about it where it's not political. It's not, I just cut out.
No, you
didn't.
I'm here.
You're great.
I lost video. It's not political. There's no like personal, you know, vitriol or like opinions going on. You're literally just like with someone doing what they're good at, and you get to just absorb that purely. I think there's something really relaxing about that as someone who watches a lot of these types of videos.
Yeah, this is closer to like watching Mad Max Fury Road, this battery channel. You know, which is like monster trucks and explosions, and you're like, wow, what a cool shot. Like, look at what these great people accomplished.
But yes, Nick, you mentioned like, or one of you mentioned like 2 million people have watched this. Surely not 2 million people are interested in building a battery pack. And I saw the same thing when I used to make tutorials on my channel. Like, I used to make a lot of After Effects tutorials, and I would always get comments on each video saying, man, I have no idea how to do effects, but I watched the whole video. And those comments always just kind of like blew me away. I'm like, why? Like, why did you just watch this 20-minute tutorial on how to use this program that you're never going to open.
It's like primitive technology, man. It's like watching someone do what they're good at.
I think there is a direct comparison, though, to these types of videos and a good story, a good dramatic narrative. Because in these videos, you're watching somebody, and like you said, Sam, there's this one-to-one like compounding effect where it's like they're going through a complex process, but they're doing so step by step. And as in anything that humans do, like it's all just a bunch of small steps like put together, you know, and that can become complex, but each step in and of itself isn't that difficult.
Yeah.
And when you're watching a good story, a person might be, or a character might be going through like this giant challenge, or, you know, some other sort of like large character arc. But the satisfying thing to watch, and it's more gripping than it is necessarily satisfying, is to watch them go through each stage of that, and to watch how they react and react again as they go through the stages. Even when that's in a short video, like even when it's like a 2-minute video, you know, or like some of Mark Rober's videos where he's built like, you know, like when he did that glitter bomb one, or like some, you know, and you're just watching people react to this thing that, you know, they don't know it's coming. And then you're getting this, you're getting this very like visceral, like, hey, I'm glad that they reacted that way. I'm glad that then this happened, or like, you know, or it was gripping to me to watch this because I didn't know how they were going to react. And all that it's weird to think about Mad Max Fury Road and this video in the same sentence, but
you have to.
Yeah. Because when I forget what Charlize Theron's character's name is, but when she's
Furiosa.
Yeah. When she's going through all that, and then you got Mad Max there, it's like,
dude,
I mean, yeah, like a Primtech video almost has all those elements in the title alone. Like it sets up urgency, like building myself a roof.
Yeah.
From scratch. Urgency. I need a roof or else I'll freeze to death.
I got a battery store window up on here. I gotta buy some batteries now.
gotta watch the whole tutorial first. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. But anyway, I think that those videos still have a very boiled down version of elements that are essential.
It's kind of what I was getting at when I was talking about the human thing at the beginning. Is like, you know, the first thing you need is a human connection, and that's, you know, the like I built myself a roof, or like I built a generator for $650. That goes to something deeper than just watching somebody build something, you know. It goes to like why is it that the DIY solar generator for $650 is the important one? The reason why that's the important one is because that's the thing that goes to like the most basic human need. It's like I can get power from the sun,
more power, less
money, $650, and with power I can do all of these other things with my life.
Or I can make a roof out of mud and sticks in a day.
I feel like this, we've entered a new territory where we're just talking about what makes interesting information in general.
Well, we need to go one step further. One step further.
What if
is
we
the
talk
most
about
complex story element in Karen freakout videos?
Let's spend a moment to kind of talk about our own approach to making what we consider a good video for, like, say, the Crew channel. Like, what are the main ingredients that we consider a good video?
Yeah.
In terms of like what we try to make, which has like the story aspect. There's like an arc to a video. There's like, you know, beginning, middle, and end, etc. So what would you say the most important thing in a Crew video would be?
A problem, a challenge, some conflict. Yeah, stakes. I mean, it's all kind of within that. But you need a problem, I think. something to be solved or like personal or a need. It has to have a any story has a need, right? The character needs something, they want something.
Yeah.
But that's where all of our stuff starts, really. It's like, all right, I have a problem, I want to make this, or this person did this, I want to do this for them or to them, you know? It's like, Ren had a problem in that your drone had been in that tree for 3 months, was it?
Yeah, it was three.
Yeah. Surprise, that wasn't set up. He really did have a drone up there for that line.
Well, it's like so many of our videos are very much so that way. They're like, we approach it, we identify a problem, and we can see the solution being something that can potentially be entertaining. And so we just kind of like start letting it happen. Like, you know, and sometimes it kind of goes a direction that's disappointing. Other times it goes a direction that is like amazing. Like, we couldn't have planned for it to be any better. Like the end of the Nerf drone video, how like Jan and I face off and I just completely destroy him. Like, that could not have gone better, especially with Jan being the antagonist throughout the entire video.
That's speaking of story, that's one of like, me and Dean were just talking the other day. That's one of our like proudest videos of like last year. Or was that this year? It's all a blur. I don't know. Last year.
It was like it was the last video we did before going into quarantine.
Okay. Yeah.
It's almost like
that seriously feels like a year ago now. Anyway, I digress. But that video is like the perfect, I think, summation of how story can be brought into a real life series of events.
Yeah.
Like, this was a project you had really been passionate about, and we had a real life villain in the office, and we just went with it. So
we never asked Jan to say any of those things. Like, we didn't ask him to be like an antagonist. He just kind of fell into the role.
He does.
Jan is like, he's like Waluigi, man.
Yeah,
Waluigi. He's like that.
That's perfect.
Well, the other thing about like letting stories happen, when we just did the drone in the tree video last week, we didn't know how that was going to go when we started. No. We knew that it was up there, and we knew we had some footage of it being kind of like of us talking about it, of you talking about it with Freddie. We knew that if you could reapproach it on camera, that there could possibly be a story there, but we didn't know. Sam, I don't know if you know this, but we didn't know that he was going to be able to get it down.
Well, yeah,
that, Sam?
There was a big assumption going into that whole project, and the assumption was I was going to get the drone down. And there were definitely some moments where I was like, oops.
Sure. Well, maybe it's just me knowing the people, knowing that you guys were approaching it. But I was like, we'll get it down. We'll figure it out. It's just a tree. Yeah. Just a drone.
But this is where we differ, Ren, as someone in front of the camera and someone behind the camera. Your assumption is that you're going to get the drone down. My assumption is that you're not going to get it down until you run into like several problems. And that's what I'm hoping for. Right. Or else I don't have a video. Like, if your assumption had been correct right away,
like, can you imagine?
That would have been boring.
If we got it down with the arrow. Yeah. Like, had we gotten there in the morning, we try the arrow, it gets stuck, we shake it, and then the drone falls down, doesn't land in the tree below it, it just lands on the ground. We're like, great. Cool, we got the drone back. Too bad we don't have a video now.
But even so, like, say that would have happened, you still could have made a story. Now, it's never as fun to make a story as if it actually like plays out before your eyes, at least in the context in which we're talking about. But you could have went back and then like told Nico that you didn't get it, and then like played some other,
definitely
game of cards there. With that expectation,
we would have had a scramble though a little bit for like, where does this go? Yeah, because our main conflict would have resolved. But I mean, we've gotten good at being able to adapt and overcome. But.
Or it falls out of a window on the freeway on the way back.
On the way back,
and you guys are.
Well, also, we've gotten good at fusing together real, genuine moments and real struggle. With more like cultivated specific storytelling moments to support all the real stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, here's my thing. It's like, we don't want to be 100% faking stuff, right? But there's a lot of stuff going on in the studio. There's a lot of discussions that happen when cameras aren't rolling. And if I hear someone say something that is useful for a story, I think it's totally okay to go back and even like make a scene of that thing happening once again for the story if it means getting it on camera, if it's important.
Yeah, we do that all the time. And there's no, there's no like, oh, shame on you. Like we're literally there. The purpose of the crew channel is to tell stories. And yeah, usually they're founded in some version of reality that we're actually experimenting with. And sometimes they're 100% like, that's just the way that it went down. But other times they're not. And it's better to like imagine and to expand upon like someone's imagination to tell a better story than it is to just like, oh, well, we were going to do that. And then Ren got the drone out of the tree.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what an opportunity wasted.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, the whole point is to make it fun to watch and like,
yeah.
And go on.
Oh yeah. And, but also it's just like, it doesn't matter if it's not on camera, you know? So if we have to make it up to get it on camera, like remember when we did the boosted board battery mod video, like 5 years ago at this point, was it 4 or 5? The ending of that video, I get into the studio and I was really late because I was spending a lot of time trying to get this board to the studio. And then like the last like 3 miles, I'm literally just like longboarding.
God,
and we filmed that whole scene where Jake's like, what happened? Where were you? And I'm like, I don't know. And it was like a scramble. All of that footage disappeared.
Yeah.
All of it was gone. The entire ending resolution to this video was wiped from the planet. And what we ended up having to do is restage that entire thing where I open up the door, drop my skateboard and bag on the ground, and you're like, where have you been? It's like,
That
was all done for a second time. What you see in the video is a recreation.
That's right.
Like, that's just an example. I mean, and we do that's that all the time for other
case
things.
Case in point. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Should I reveal the dirty little secret about the drone rescue video?
Please.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Uh-oh. Taking a look under the hood.
So
what do we got in here?
Tuesday morning, we got up early and we went to the park and we managed to fly the drone into the tree and rescue the other drone, the original drone. Flew the Mavic into the tree. So that drone fell out of the tree and landed on the big gazebo bush.
Yeah.
Then we went to the studio and filmed the scene with Nico and I, where Nico's like, you have to get that drone out of the tree or else you got to repay the studio for the GoPro. Oh no, how are we going to do that?
Well, here's
and
the
then
thing.
We went back and Nick climbed up the tree to get it out of the bush.
Here's
that was
the
real life
thing.
Series of events.
I have to make this really important distinction here though, whereas yes, that was what you would call faked, but that was only because the actual conversation where Nico had that with you happened months ago and wasn't filmed.
No, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter if it's not on camera.
Yeah. But that's the thing is that there are, yeah.
Was real, but what was captured and what the audience sees was technically a fabrication, but it was
we're dramatizing. All we're doing is dramatizing the real stories that are happening.
Yes.
And like, you know, when you see that thing like on a crime show where it's like a dramatization or of the killer sneaking around, and it's like not the actual footage of him sneaking around. He didn't sneak around in that shot, but he did.
What?
He did. At one point, he truly did sneak around.
They're walking around.
Yeah, but that's the thing. And with just what, like that conversation with Nico, it's like that wasn't the actual conversation where that happened, but Nico did have that.
Exactly.
It's still truthful at its core, yeah. But for the sake of like making sense out of it from a story standpoint, you have to do those kind of things.
Yeah, constructed.
I have to put that out there because I don't want people going through these videos and like, oh my God, this is all fake. Like, I don't know what to believe anymore because, but that's the thing is it's like, it still is just as real, whether we refilmed the conversation or not.
Exactly. There's always some sort of basis in reality for it. It's not like we're just making stuff up for the sake of like drama. The only time
Wes and Jake really wanted to have a trial.
That's exactly what I was about to mention. The whole like camera room trial.
Sometimes.
It's like, only because we think it's funny and it's a joke to us.
Everyone's in on the joke. You know? That works because it's
did screw up the camera.
Like, we're not trying to actually make people think we're gonna fucking like take Nico to prison. Like
that's a good
just a joke. Example.
Like Nico had put down that rule of like you got to keep the stuff off of the table, and we had it on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing, the whole reason why that video came to be was because we were talking about like, well, what should we do? Like he broke the rule.
Well, if it's an exploration of what if we actually followed our own rules for once, which we thought was funny because we don't. Like that camera room is like a tornado all the time. And like, it was like, well, what if we actually like followed our rules and like we had to pin this on Nico himself, you know?
But also that video was basically just an improv show. It was us performing an improv show where the audience was the camera. And you know, and it was entertaining. I had a friend talk to me. He was like, I have no idea why that video was so entertaining. Why did I watch that entire thing? Why was I enthralled the entire time watching that video? It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen, but I couldn't look away. It was so fun. I'm like, thank you.
Exactly.
Hey, next time,
that's a compliment.
Next time someone's got to be gone like for an extended period of time, we should have them go on trial for something like prior to them being gone, and then explain them being gone away as if they went to jail. They went to court.
They're gone. They got banished.
Yeah, that would have been easier to do back in like mid 2016 when we had a new video coming out every other day.
Yeah,
that's another thing. Our style of videos that we've made have evolved so much in the last 4 years. Assuming we're starting from the vlogs, you know, like obviously we were making content for years before that, but like,
you know, the vlogs go.
Where'd the vlogs go?
They're coming back on the website.
Yes.
Those had obviously far less structure, but there's always something that there was always a point to this video. There's always something that one of us were either exploring or doing, and the camera was just along for the ride. And so a lot of these same principles apply to those earlier videos.
Yeah. A lot of lessons learned in that process, honestly, because when we started that, we were primarily focused on narrative storytelling and visual storytelling, and mm-hmm. Being on camera as talent ourselves, telling our own stories about our own challenges wasn't something that any of us were really familiar with at that time. And sometimes those are more fun to watch because there's like some real moments of like real situations happening, and and Nick and Carmichael had the audacity and like the balls to just like get into a conversation and just like point the camera at somebody as there's like some really pretty intense conversations happening.
There were times where it was very uncomfortable. It's like, I don't want this conversation on camera, but here we are.
I'm excited to bring that back a little bit on the
side. Yeah. Yeah.
I do miss a little bit of that. And some of that, a little bit of like live action, like, you know, real time. Here's the situation as it's playing out I think it just makes you better, you know, like it makes you better at like engaging with people. It makes you
you can see us getting better at like conducting ourselves and like telling stories. Like if you watched like Jake in the early vlogs, you're so different, dude. Like you're so like awkward. But like you just didn't like know how to present yourself, and you know,
I'm the same way. Like back in those early days, maybe not so much the vlog, but like anytime I was on screen for like a behind the scenes video, it always like looking back at those video clips, I'm just like, this is so cringy. Why am I like this? Why am I the way I am?
Well, and it's half. Everyone's like that.
But I feel like I've become more natural on camera, which is actually a bit of a skill set to develop. It's not necessarily like a natural thing. And I've only developed that because I've been on camera for the last however many so years. I mean, yeah, same thing for all three of you.
We take for granted quite a bit. So just a little side note on that. I went back to my hometown last September for this like sports event thing where I had to give a speech. And
what?
Yeah, well, they were inducting me to the Hall of Fame, the community.
Oh, just a little induction into a little Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame induction. You know.
Yeah.
You know, just best ever.
Black at the community track, you know, not a big deal. So anyway,
Michael Jordan was in the front row, but, you know, yeah, whatever.
No big deal. President of the United States.
Talking with LeBron in the front row. So I had to give a speech, and it's a short speech, you know, but, like, everyone brought up their, you know, everyone brought up their, like, piece of paper and whatever. But the day before, I was just memorizing, like, my talking points, honestly.
Ah.
Like, memorizing what I was, and I was kind of just, like, I had my outline in my head, and then I just went up there, and I was just, like, and it felt just like I was talking to the camera. You know, there's, mm-hmm. like, a light in your face, yeah. and you can't really yeah. see. You just know that it's, like, there, and I just kind of did the same thing that we do normally when we turn the camera on. And then afterwards,
Squarespace.
Yeah, no. And then afterwards, this guy was like, man, you should be a public speaker. Like, you're really natural up there. And I was like, I didn't think about it. But then I realized, like, oh, the reason why that is because of all these times where we've been, you know, just on camera and on camera and on camera. These are better stories.
It also kind of leads to a bit of awkwardness whenever you meet people in real life. Like, whenever I meet fans who approach me and they're like, hey, you know, they have this preconceived notion of who I am because of who they see in these videos, which is like me on camera, me who is in all of these corridor crew videos and me in real life are very similar, but they're not exactly the same. I'm definitely a little bit more heightened
yeah.
version of myself on camera. And
you're edited.
I'm edited, yeah.
Also, everyone says so and but a lot too.
I'm so bad at that. I'm still so bad at that.
I'm so but.
Yeah. And like.
Yeah.
I mean, also, being on stage is like a unique thing though, because it's like,
different.
It's the scariest thing, but once you're up there, it's like everything changes. It's like the audience disappears and you're just doing your thing.
Yeah. Every time we do those Adobe presentations at NAB, it's like I go up there and it's like, it's really, you're really nervous. And then once it gets going, you're just like, I'm just going to like dance like a monkey and try and make people laugh for the next hour. And that's my only goal. It's like, you have your outline, but yeah, it's like, it's easy to get comfortable once you get that singular focus of like, all right, I'm just doing my thing. No one cares. If I get some chuckles, that's all we need.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, and that's those little things, that's what makes a story. I mean, that's how you tell an engaging story to begin with, you know, is it's not just the information that's being conveyed, but it's how you're conveying it. There's something deeper there too than just like necessarily what makes a good video, but really what like the presentation of information in a precise, characterized way, in a way that is like stylized with someone's personality, is more interesting almost every time, and you're more likely to pay attention to it than if it's just, you know, reading from script or whatever.
The thing I think about a lot lately is like the idea between like theater or like even just telling jokes as a comedian in person. The more I listen to like the Joe Rogan podcast and hear comedians talk about their experience of practicing bits, so to speak, and refining them, really has gotten me thinking about like, well, when you do stuff in video form, you're basically like, you're sighting everything in, you're now, you got everything cleaned, ready to go. And you're like, here we go. And you take the shot and that's, you get one shot. You know what I mean? If the joke doesn't land, you don't like delete the video, make some edits, and re-upload it. You know what I mean? It just requires such a high bar of like precision and forethought that you can test it out as much as you can by like what, showing it to friends, people, etc. But
reminds me, Nick.
Your mom is always going to think your video is good. Okay.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Oh, Nick, do you remember when we were filming the drone retrieval video, that woman came up to the gazebo and she's like,
yeah.
Hey, mind if I start like practicing my material? And we're like, huh? She's like, my comedy material. Do you mind if I just practice it here? And we're like, sure. Yeah, no problem. And so, because we're still trying
so she's to get, just like, N-word.
Just like this little Asian like, lady. Just
I do mind.
And you're like, wait.
I do mind.
Like, we'll laugh about that later.
Yeah,
but that's
yeah. She's like,
I said on another audience.
Tone it down.
She's like a 60-year-old woman wearing scrubs who was just wanted to like be up on a platform and just say her jokes out loud. It wasn't that she was like I think she was kind of hoping no one would be there, but we were, so she just dealt with it. And she had a couple jokes that were pretty funny. I think most of the jokes kind of were just like, you know, like, but she was practicing and then she finished and left and it was like, okay. I'd never really come across something like that in the wild before.
Yeah. I don't think many people do.
Yeah. I was talking with somebody that, was in comedy and that's kind of, they said, I was like, how did you get into that? What do you do? And she basically said, what I did was I would go to laundromats and I would just like do my laundry. And then while I was doing my laundry, I would just practice my jokes out loud to people and see if people reacted to them.
Interesting. And that's very smart.
It works though.
Captive audience in a way.
And I'm like, yeah, no, that's actually really smart because like how else would you do it? Because if you practice it with friends or like family, it's almost as if, you know, they're too close to you.
Yeah, you get the pity laughs.
Yeah, to give you an accurate assessment of whether or not it's actually like high cheeked, like
They laugh before you say the punchline of the joke.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I haven't said the funny part yet.
That's really funny.
Maybe I should just say you rewrite a joke so that it doesn't have a punchline because of that. And then all of a sudden it just makes it worse. It's just,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. But yeah, that's, we kind of do the same thing in a weird way. It's just, it's posted on the internet sometimes and, you know, oftentimes we'll show each other. I mean, that's a good source of way to make a video better right there is like,
Show it
to your friends and family and do show it to people. Do show it to small audiences and get their feedback.
Watch my 2-hour battery tutorial.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not that, but
we do review sessions in the studio where it's like, all right, this video's done. Let's all watch it and then give notes. And sometimes that can be a bit problematic because everyone's busy, but like usually the videos turn out better because, well, first off, we've all gotten good at being able to cultivate good critiques and good feedback. Yeah. Also it's like, you know, just getting outside perspectives on those things, just little suggestions here and there. Suddenly like, oh, I didn't even consider that. And then you implement it and suddenly the video is better. Mm-hmm. That is a very easy way. It's like, just even if it is someone close to it, even if it is like your significant other or a partner or a friend.
Yeah.
Just watch the video. Yes, they're going to be biased. Yes. They'll give you like biased reviews, especially if they're trying not to hurt your feelings, but a lot of the time they'll have a question like, I didn't understand that bit right there. And you're like, huh? It makes total sense. You're like, it didn't make sense to me because of this. And you're like, oh, I get it now. So now you go back and you fix that moment and the video is better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never get too attached. That's definitely important. Carmichael had to post it.
We've all
kill had your babies.
The hard way. There's a video actually, Sam, you and I and Nico are watching Minecraft John Cena. And I don't know if you remember that video while it was in post, but it didn't quite like hit what I was going for. You know, it was only like the third video or whatever that I had like actually like directed. And it wasn't quite there. And there's a very real conversation that we have on camera about how the fact that the video isn't as good as we had hoped and like what now to do about it. And we've gotten a lot better at giving critiques and like taking critiques, knowing that it's in the best interest of the video, but
that's really hard. But that's a skill set too.
It took years to develop that, honestly, because there's a lot of times where, especially as you're, you know, if you're, I mean, you're constantly trying to improve your ability,
yeah,
right? But there's also a phase where you kind of before, when you go from amateur to at least like a consistent professional, where you're also going through a phase of learning how to take criticism and give criticism, but at the same time, you're not an amateur. Like, you know your mistakes and you know what you should be doing, but you're not quite hitting that. And that's, you know, I don't think you're ever truly out of that, like as a creator, but that is, you get less and less of it ideally over time. But that is one of the hardest things, especially when it first starts hitting you, to really overcome. Because it requires,
it's like, what?
Oh, yeah,
it requires, it's like,
ah. It requires the ability to like dust yourself off, pick yourself up, try it again.
It's easy to get defensive, but it's like, it's not personal, but it's just like, that's the default reaction to you know, criticism is to take something personally.
Yeah.
And you have to like learn to be like, listen, me, this is not personal. Don't take it personally.
Right.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially here in this kind of stuff, it is quite personal, you know. Because there's a lot of personal decisions. It's
an expression of your own personality, yeah.
But none of that matters unless it comes through in the video. So,
right.
I mean, you can be as personal as you want, but if you don't let people give you feedback and take their feedback, then you're being selfish and you're not putting out a good video.
Yeah.
In fact,
you're not going to get better.
If you put out a video and no one's watched it and you haven't like taken any of their advice and consideration, if it's untouched by other people's critiques, don't put out that video. It's not ready yet. That's what I'd say. Really? Yeah. I mean, really?
Yeah. Like, I think that may be true on the other end of the rainbow. If you've been creating for so long that you know exactly what you want to do, and it's like, you're on the completely other side of that, but that's not what we're talking about here. That example is Yoda.
Yeah.
We're talking about Anakin.
I'm talking like, how do I make a good video to someone who doesn't know how?
The lady on the gazebo, talking about her. It's like, imagine you're not a professional comedian. You don't tell jokes for a living. You think you have a very good joke. Yeah. Where do you turn?
Right.
Do you turn to someone you know, someone you meet, and tell them the joke? Or do you spend 4 or 5 months trying to get an open mic gig to get on a stage and tell it to like 100 people for the first time?
No, you would want to test it prior.
although that's a good crew video right there. Maybe more of a node one right now.
Oh my God, that is a good
comedy. Where the idea is that we all have to write jokes that we're going to do for open mic, and then but we are not allowed to talk or tell anyone
studio. Wait,
you can't use social media to test out the jokes, and we cannot and no one in the studio can know. Like, we can, you know, tell our families or friends outside of the studio, but it's an open mic race.
Oh my God, we should do this.
And I've got some jokes.
I see that desk back there. You got some back there.
See that? I got some jokes. I got some jokes on that.
Is that desk. A joke there?
That's a joke desk. Yeah. Huh. That's my joke desk. That's where I put my bills.
Bills and jokes.
I'm not going to pay you. Water bill.
Jokes.
Got him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be so bad.
But so funny.
Or maybe not.
So how do we redeem that? Because we have to hedge against utter failure.
But if we have to find comedy,
I think that is the joke. Is utter failure. I mean, some people win, some people lose in the comedy game.
Oh my God!
Let's find out who.
No. Can this succeed. Is how we do it. We edit it together. We supercut. So it's like, how did we do? And that's a supercut. Where we add laughter into everything.
Yeah.
And then
we have a green screen with the laughter.
Like, no, this is how it actually went.
Yes.
And then it's joke, and then followed by like tons of, it's like Nathan for you, like awkward. Like,
Wait, can we just hire people to come in and be a like studio audience with no context on who we are?
Okay. Or
what we do.
What if we do that? Like we have a stage in the studio. And then we have like a small crowd of people that don't know who we are, that come and sit. And then in the back, like one of, maybe Sam, maybe you've got like the controls on like different laugh keys.
Hold on, but here's the thing. Let's keep it about this. We have to keep the joke open mic thing secret or something. And then there's one person that we only tell like less than 24 hours in advance. Like, let's say Peter is here. Like, we go like, Peter, we need an extra person for a shoot tomorrow. And then he's like, what is it? And we're like, we need you to come up with a few jokes. Okay. Like just come up with a few jokes for everyone. You know, stuff that'll make people laugh.
Yeah.
Like, how many people? It's like, oh, I don't know. It's just like, you know, 100 people. It's an open mic. It's a pretty casual open mic thing.
Casual thing.
I think this is a real idea. I think we can totally do this probably next year, probably not this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you need to have the one person who has like no time to think about it and see how they do compared to all these people who are like,
if you really want to like turn the burner up on that, you live stream the whole thing live on Instagram to our whole audience. So it's like thousands and thousands of people watching instead of just a couple dinky real people.
Well, then you want to also release a video.
You what?
At a time. Well, I mean, if it's part of the video, if it's the conclusion for the video, but yeah.
I think if it's the conclusion for the video, because you don't want to ruin the... You don't want to ruin the jokes by getting them out on live stream early.
Either way. Just throwing it out there. Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
Very intense idea.
All right. Well, there you go. Hopefully Peter doesn't watch this podcast.
Don't watch it, Peter.
Peter, you should have stopped listening to this as soon as you heard your name. So
well, I bet he's not gonna like
dang it, Peter. This,
but people are gonna send it to him and now he's gonna know about
it's okay.
Dang
it.
We'll title this video What Makes
It Could Be One of Us, by the way. It could be one of us.
Parentheses, Peter, don't watch this.
I mean, Ren, it could even be you. We might just call you up and say, hey, Ren, tomorrow at 5.
Dude, I really hope the lithium solar guy watches this video.
Yeah. If you guys want to watch his videos and let him know that you came from Corridor Cast, that'd be awesome.
Does anyone else, like, what are some of your guys's, what are some good videos you guys have seen recently? Any cool recs for the audience?
All Gas No Brakes.
All Gas No Brakes.
Sam's been into that one.
If you guys haven't seen All Gas No Brakes, you are...
I've seen this guy.
He is so funny.
Yeah, the Portland one is really funny.
I watch history and see what I got for you.
He's Ren super and funny.
Jake, you will love All Gas No Brakes. I swear.
I feel like I know this. I don't remember.
Watch his video titled Portland Protest, Jay.
He goes to like crazy places.
Wait, I did see a video where he went to the beach up in like Detroit or something like that.
Oh, yeah, July. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
That was insane.
So great.
He's very dry. Super dry.
Let's see. yeah, I got to see that.
So good.
Speaking of videos that I cannot stop watching. It's a tragedy, but I can't stop watching the explosion in Beirut.
Oh yeah, dude. Those are crazy videos.
What?
You gotta watch the videos. You have to watch the videos that aren't pointing at the explosion. You have to watch the videos that are people filming day-to-day stuff in the city and seeing what happens. Those are the ones that give you good context. Like I was watching one that was, they were filming, it was like a wedding video of a bride.
Mm, yeah.
I saw that.
Chilling out. Yeah. And it's just shit rains down.
Yeah.
That's where I was like, this is cool. I'm like, whoa, holy crap. I mean, granted, when I saw 9/11, I said cool because I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, it taps on like that.
Whoa.
I like Con Air and Air Force One. I'm digging this news story.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, you pass by an accident on the freeway and you can't look away. It's kind of similar to that, you know.
Yeah.
Never see explosions go off in a city like this. And so suddenly you have the world's best reference material for what something like that would look like because it is real. It's obviously tragic. It's horrific. But it's also incredible in its own right because it's so just like this...
It's
pure power of energy is
And some of these videos, yeah, like you see, like, because there's the two stages, or there's like three stages, but after the, like, the second kind of semi big explosion goes off and there's the huge plume for a couple minutes, some of these videos are so far away, and you're like, just like all the people filming them are, you're like, oh, they're probably safe where they are. And then that final explosion goes off and the camera just gets enveloped in, yeah, like a split second. You're like,
there's that, there's a crazy angle where the guy was going down the road and you see the explosion off in the distance, and it, like, it, it eclipses the sun, like the whole, yeah, cloud that is created from it, literally condensing the water out of the air, like literally creates a shadow because it blocks the sun for a moment.
It's insane.
What was it that exploded?
So it started off with fireworks, but the fireworks were stored with a bunch of ammonium nitrate, like almost
that's
three,
what it was,
like, yeah, 1,000 tons, of ammonium nitrate. Mm. And yeah, I mean, it's fertilizer. It's just, if you, yeah, because it's a very good oxidizer. And so if you put enough heat in and whatnot in it, it's, yeah, it'll explode. We've had the same sort of accident happen multiple times throughout history. It happened in Texas. It happened in Canada. It happened in China 5 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was reading.
Oh, was that the Halifax explosion?
The Halifax one. Yeah. That was the one I was reading about yesterday.
Was that the same cause?
Mm-hmm. I mean, really? Okay, I don't know for a fact, but I'm, no, I'm like,
but like
mostly confident it was the same exact situation.
It was there. They had like munitions like for World War One on a boat, and basically like two boats crashed into each other, and a fire got started when the propellers of one boat tried to like move away post collision. It was like they crash, and they're like, "Wait a second, we can get out of this." They start the propellers up, and it created sparks, which created a fire.
Well, you're gonna get out of it.
Wow. Yeah. One in Texas.
Those photos are insane because, like, it's like all wood buildings and like it's straight leveled. Like, yeah,
Halifax one was about twice as big.
Wow. Yeah.
What?
Wow. Like the entire town just disappears.
Yeah, that was. What's his face used in the Oklahoma City bombing?
What's his name?
Yes, it was. I think it may have been sodium nitrate. I don't know, but it was some sort of nitrate like that. Yeah. But he used obviously a much smaller amount than what we're seeing here.
Right.
Yeah. So another quick clarification to the explosion. I'm seeing some misinformation. It was like 2,700 tons of ammonium nitrate there. So people are saying it's like a 2.7 kiloton bomb, but the kiloton is referencing tons of TNT, and ammonium nitrate is about 40% as efficient at exploding as TNT. So really it's a little over like a 1 kiloton bomb, which is still huge, but it's only a 15th of what, you know, leveled Hiroshima.
Wow.
Do they know how many people died yet?
I think the death toll is up to 150.
Which is pretty good, considering how
huge. No, just
that was, yeah, not gonna say,
but it destroyed a lot of buildings and homes. 300,000.
Well, luckily, it was at the port. I think it's because it was at the port. If it was like in a urban complex center, yeah, that would have been.
Yeah, the population density at a port isn't that high.
Yeah, it's pretty insane too. Just seeing these like concrete structures just turn to powder.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
Really gives you respect for the lack of permanence of everything around us.
Right.
Seeing that stuff.
You gotta make the most of it. Go out and tell good stories, guys.
Yep. I'm sure there's gonna be some amazing heroic stories coming out of that horrible event.
But yeah.
I can imagine. Okay,
last two videos to put end on a little bit of a lighter note. Somebody put together a compilation of Will Ferrell MLB highlights. Okay, now that's good. I'll put that in the description. And then
I got one.
What was the other one? That
Trump interviewing Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Scott's $1 million versus $1 billion video.
Such a good video.
Yeah, that's a great video.
If you have an hour and a half to spare, check it out.
You don't have to watch the whole thing. You could skip through it.
I didn't watch the whole thing. I skipped through it. It was cool that he gave us a shout out, though.
Yeah,
it's because I literally saw Tom and we had lunch like probably like a couple weeks after I'd finished that video. And we had talked about that sort of thing where he's like, I think it'd be better if you do it like linearly in one dimension. I was like, yeah, you're right. I didn't do it. Oops. He's like, maybe I'll do it. And here we are a year later and he finally did it.
Yeah.
So cool.
there's tons of great videos online. Everyone who like is able to make a living off of YouTube probably makes good videos.
Yeah, if you guys don't know,
respect. I mean,
Matt Carricker's got like one of the biggest channels on YouTube, but Off the Ranch.
Yep.
Or Demolition Ranch. You know, it's like he's just doing like vlog stuff, but even his videos, you know, there's still like most of them still have the fundamental, like, okay, here's my problem, and then here's what I need to do to overcome that problem. Even though it's, you know, like vlog type stuff.
Well, simplicity, it can be powerful still. I mean,
yeah,
it's sometimes also, you just want to see someone do a simple task.
Yeah.
Know, or experiment.
It's also unique, I think, in the sense that he's not like, he's not some like, you know, Instagram vlogger type individual. Like, he's just this pretty regular dude that is just kind of out on his property, and he's just, you know, that's why it's got this like ranch vibe. Nobody's really doing that, not like that anyway.
Yeah, definitely. There's this sick documentary that's free on YouTube. I'd love to put it down in the description for you guys. It's kind of like Prim Tech, but it's documenting this group of people, these archaeologists technically, that are, for the last like 17 years, they've been building a medieval castle from the 13th century by hand with only the tools that would have been disposable back then. And it's freaking sweet, dude. It's really insane. It's called Secrets of the Castle. It's a 5-part thing on YouTube, but
It's
fascinating, dude. Like, they've been working at this, like, these are craftsmen. They have like the guy who makes rope, the guy who makes the bricks, the master artisan, like stonemason. It's really cool. And they're all using these like huge hamster wheel cranes
Get
the stones up the towers. It's called, it's on a channel called Absolute History, Secrets of the Castle. But it's like an advanced Prim Tech, basically, for anyone who wants to get into that.
I'm into that, dude. You know I'm into that.
I mean, after watching this, I was like, how do we go there and work on a castle for a month and make content?
Going to England to work
on a castle. It's still going on, I believe. Like, this is an ongoing, like, historical thing in France that they're doing. So,
dang.
It's pretty dope. Super fascinating.
Well, long story short, there's a bunch of videos out there, guys, and go out and watch them or go out and make them. So,
speaking of videos, that'll probably be pretty good, hopefully. Nick and I are going to be filming a one wheel video next week.
Yeah.
Hopefully that turns out well.
That's next week already?
Confirmed you guys are going?
Yeah, it's confirmed. Yeah. We have our flights. We're going. We're going to get to film. Yeah. I'm so excited. I have to train. I'm going to go up to the top of a mountain when we're done here.
Are you training every day, Ren?
Every day. I'm trying to put in at least like 10 to 15 miles a day.
Okay.
Wow. Park City?
Hmm?
Is it Park City?
Oh, we don't know yet.
Oh, top secret.
We don't know where the race is going to be held until like we're there. They are trying so hard to keep it secretive, one, so that like randos don't show up, but two, to kind of like create this like reality TV air mystery, you know, like the amazing race, you know, you show up ready to do something, but you don't know exactly what you're going to do.
They're going to let you ride the course before you race it, right?
That's what I'm assuming. But we also have 2 days where there are going to be other competitions that we're doing, and we don't know what those are going to be. But right now, the main race is going to be an off-road trail race, probably through the woods. It's going to be a course.
Are you going to put a 360 camera on or a GoPro or both?
I think everyone's going to be wearing GoPros. I'm probably going to bring a 360 camera. Those usually give like the coolest angles.
Are you going to cut your hair into a mullet?
So, okay, I've been thinking about that.
We should do something crazy.
I want to cut my hair, but I don't want to like...
Mullet.
Just two plugs off the side. One on each side.
Go like hard buzz on the side, straight like hard mullet, and then just leave everything else. So it's like a mo mullet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And then wear like... paint your helmet like an American flag.
This is awful. This is absolutely awful.
It's horrible.
Yes, dude.
That's incredible. It's just enough to distract your opponents.
Yeah, exactly. You'll throw them off. They won't even know what hit them.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to try to get my hair cut maybe this weekend. I don't know how. I might have Jenna do it. I haven't figured it out yet.
Scissors.
Can you guys, you guys can't get haircuts right now?
I don't know. Can we?
You can.
You can.
Probably.
Places. Yeah. That's illegal.
That's illegal. Hey, don't have too big of a party. They're going to turn your water off.
Well, that's another thing, son. That's another thing. You saw those videos. That's for another time. I'll debate you on that. Let's go. Yeah.
All right. Later.
I hate parties. All right, is this the outro? Are we saying goodbye right now?
Yeah, we're saying goodbye. Yeah.
Okay. Bye, everyone. Thanks for watching.
Bye.
That was a fun talk, guys.
Yeah. It was good.
Fun.
Was good.
Let's do it again sometime. Make a YouTube channel.
Thank you, Sam.
All about that DB.
Bye.